Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Sam Sussman's debut novel, Boy from the North Country, is a powerful story about family, identity, and the secrets that shape us. At its center is Evan, a 26-year-old who's been living abroad when he's suddenly called back to the isolated farmhouse where he grew up with his mother, June. June is dying, and she's ready to share the truths she's held close all her life. Evan has never known the identity of his father. What he begins to learn is astonishing. The story of June's passionate, complicated romance with Bob Dylan, an artist Evan reveres and a man that strangers have long said he resembles. Boy from the North Country captures a son coming to terms with his mother's love, her wisdom, and her remarkable legacy. And we are delighted to welcome Sam Sussman to this week's book show. So nice to have you on the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
A pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You know, I think it's cliche when we say things like this, but in your case, I think it's deadly accurate, which is no one else could have written this novel, really. I mean, you were pretty much the only person who could have written this story.
Jonathan Franzen has a line I love. He says, "Nothing was ever written that was more autobiographical than Kafka's Metamorphosis." So it's true that there's a great deal of my life in this novel. I think there's a great deal the life of any writer in any work. And maybe it's true that no work can be written by anyone except the person who writes it.
So this started out as an essay, a memoir essay. And what was the reaction from that led you to say, okay, I want to keep writing about this, but in a novelistic form?
The memoir tells a similar story to the novel. It's my experience growing up with my mother in the Hudson Valley, knowing, as you said before, learning at a certain point that she had had this relationship with Dylan, being told by strangers that I looked like him, and her slowly opening up about their relationship. And the spiritual arc of that story is toward my coming into an understanding that what shaped me, what I value most in who I am as a person, were the gifts that my mother gave to me. That story is a search for the father that resolves in an understanding of the mother. And of course, I knew when I went to write this book that that title of that piece was The Silent Type on possibly being Bob Dylan's son. I wanted to create a work of art that was larger than the experiences of my life. And I knew the first thing that everyone would want to know is, well, are you Dylan's child? And to me, that is not part, that question is part of the story, but the more compelling answer, the answer that I've come to in my own life, is that I'm my mother's son. So I had to find what Samuel Beckett calls the form that fits the mess. To me, the novel was the right form. The novel denies facticity by its very nature. It says, I'm not going to tell you what's true or what's not true, but I'm going to tell you a deeper truth about our lives. And that's what I'm trying to do in Boy from the North Country. And that's not just the story specific to my life. I think we're all trying to understand who our parents are and what their experiences have been that made us who we are. And that's the story that I want to tell.
How old were you in real life when the connection was made in your brain, fully understanding the questions that you were getting of, are you Bob Dylan's son?
Well, first people would tell me that I looked like him, but it didn't register to me. I mean, I was just flattered because someone had introduced me to his music and I enjoyed it like tens of millions of other people. Then at a certain point, someone said to me, you know, your mother had a relationship with him. And that moment changed everything for me because she was raising me in the woods in the Hudson Valley, certainly not around celebrities or rock stars or anything like that. And the idea was sort of fantastic. And gradually she started opening up to me more about that relationship and that period of her life. And It became, in a way, when she started talking to me about that period, the question of Dylan brought me closer into periods of her life that she might not otherwise have spoken to me about. And so much of Boy from the North Country, it's a recreation of my mother's life in this bohemian 1970s New York art world. And that's where her relationship with Dylan began. She was his lover when he was writing Blood on the Tracks. There are intimate descriptions of that in the book. But my questions about him and that search, what it really did was bring me closer into her life and into a deeper understanding of the decisions and the values that had made her who she was.
The fact that she is also in the novel dealing with cancer and in such a state, Evan is the caregiver in the novel as well. What struck me so much about the novel is how beautiful the relationship is between the two of you for so many reasons. But chief among them is the respect that you both have for each other in what you tell and what you don't tell. And how long you take to tell individual things. And that goes back really to my initial question of, nobody else could have written this because that I don't know how you would make up that timing in the sense of that feeling of how it comes out and when it comes out and when is the right time to ask a question and when it's not the right time to ask a question.
I think that's one of the most profound experiences of life. You get to know someone, even someone you have as intimate relationship as a child does with a parent or a parent with a child. But we never know one another completely. We never know ourselves completely. And even the people in our lives with whom we have deep, intimate relationships, they always surprise us with the parts of their lives that they haven't been ready to share, or that simply had yet to emerge. And my mother was someone who had a very deeply layered life. And she was also someone who lived in the present. And so it wasn't until really I was in my 20s that she was ready to share with me aspects of her life that I write about at length in the book that to me were extraordinary. I mean, the details of her relationship with Dylan, her own life as an actress at that period. But she was a humble person. She didn't go around saying, oh, I had been here, I had done that. She took great satisfaction from the life that she was living in the quietude of our woods and her work as a holistic health practitioner, which brought her meaningfully into the lives of hundreds of people who she was trying to help live fuller and healthier lives. And so it took years of getting to know each other as adults before she was ready to share with me the events, the experiences that had made her who she was.
Sam Sussman is our guest on this week's book show. The name of the new novel is Boy from the North Country. Even as a holistic health practitioner in the novel, this is a person who isn't even telling her patients. She keeps going and keeps doing what it is that she does, even while she's fighting this horrible disease. And it's the same with you in the conversations and the relationship that you have, trying to keep that all as even keeled as possible.
My mother was a fiercely independent woman. She was someone who really made her own life in her own way. She lived alone in a beautiful part of the world. And, some of my earliest memories of her from childhood are of her chopping firewood with a wood grip handle axe. And I write in the book about how, she would chop that wood one day, and the next day we would drive into New York City and go to a Ibsen or Chekhov play, and she would know every line. She would mouth every line as she was sitting next to me. She was someone who had great range emotionally, spiritually, intellectually. And the journey of this book, the journey of my life, has been so much coming into an understanding of all that she had to offer and who she was. And as I say, I think that is a deeply universal experience. And we're born, we see our parents from the vantage point of childhood, and then if we are lucky over time, we start to see them more clearly as themselves.
There is a section in the book. I'd like to read it. It because I thought it beautifully explained and shows the depth of the relationship. I've always loved that poem, my mother said. After Howl, people thought Ginsberg had only criticisms to make. He didn't hate the world. He wanted to tell us what he loves. The typewriter is holy, I called out. Your turn to read me something, she said. Did you ever meet Ginsberg? I asked. She looked quizzically at me. Why would I have met Ginsberg? Because he was friends with Dylan. My mother's fingers tensed on the vape. I sensed her lifting herself beyond the reach of the drug as if she did not trust what she might say under its influence. I didn't meet his friends, she said. If that's what you want to know, it wasn't that sort of relationship. What sort of relationship was it? Let's discuss this another time. And you say, what other time, Mom? The idea that she almost has a plan of when she's going to tell you what she's going to tell you was interesting to me.
That's what you've just read is one of my favorite scenes of the novel. And it comes from a moment where a character drawn from my mother and the character drawn from me are smoking her medical marijuana and reading poetry to each other. And so much of this book is about being a young man suddenly in a position of having to care for a parent who's going through cancer. And that was a deeply difficult experience for me. I wasn't ready for it. I think no one ever is. But I wanted to pay tribute to the ways that we also found joy and had fun and smoked her medical pot and read poetry to each other. And yes, also had difficult conversations. And the conversation that you've just read, it then leads into, in the following chapter, she's going to begin speaking about her chronicles of the 1970s and how she met Dylan in a painting class in New York, and they began a relationship. And she met him at a moment when he was in deep artistic and personal crisis, and he was desperate to make music that felt worthwhile to him again. He was in his early mid-30s, and he felt he hadn't written anything worthwhile since the first half of his 20s. And she gives an account of what it was like to have him in the apartment that she lived in then, which is actually where I'm talking to you from now. It's where I live and where he wrote Blood on the Tracks. And she's going to take us into that story and share parts of her life she's never shared before.
How important was it for you to have some time, some separation from her death, your mother's death, to writing the fictional story?
Oh, Joe, it was so important. I came out of the hospital in which she died, and I staggered out of that hospital with a bleeding heart, and I couldn't think straight. I couldn't have sat down and processed these emotions and written a novel. And that took me years. September 16th, the day the book comes out, happens to be precisely the 8th anniversary of my mother's death. And that's a pure coincidence. I didn't have control over the publishing calendar, and the publisher didn't know that date. But I believe deeply in the significance that we give to time, memory, motifs. This is the material of life and of literature. And I wanted to be ready to write it. And every year around the anniversary of her death, I would take a week off from my phone, from the internet. I would shut my laptop off and I would go to her home where I grew up near Goshen, Hudson Valley. And I would ask myself in that week, am I ready to start writing this book drawn from my love of my mother and my grief at her death? And it took me 3 years before I was ready. And on the third anniversary, I was painting, actually. I was on the hill with a French easel. I was painting the landscape. And there was just a moment where the brush was moving across the canvas, and I had the feeling, I'm ready now. I put the brush down and I walked inside the house and I started to write.
If it were me, and it's not, but if it were me, I would look at what you just described of the date of the book coming out and the 8th anniversary, on the 8th anniversary, as the way my brain would tell me to look at it is that your mother is ready to accept the story from you.
Oh, that's a powerful way of putting it. And I think what mattered to me most in writing this book, characters aren't people, and people can't fit so neatly into a character. Even if you're Proust and Knausgård and you have thousands of pages, you still can't quite do it. And I learned that writing this book. And I felt every day that I sat down that the greatest challenge I had was taking the complexity of this woman who I knew and loved, but also whom I only really knew in the second half of her life, right, when I was her son. And I had to take everything I knew about her and put it on the page in a way that people who are never going to meet her would feel that they knew who she was. And that, to me, was the most important artistic, emotional, spiritual purpose of the writing. And I hope she'd see herself and she would be happy with my attempt. And her painting instructor, Norman Rabin, who was in Rabin's class when she first met Dylan, Rabin used to say, every piece of art is a failure, but the purpose is to create a worthwhile failure. So I hope that's what I've done.
Do you have a sense that the novel that you have written and the story that you tell is accurate in the sense of the deep, deep loving relationship that you had?
Well, it was very important to me that I also write about what was difficult in our relationship, because if I was only writing a sentimental or romanticized version of a mother-son relationship, that's not real and it can't be useful in anyone's lives. And so I write about what she didn't want to talk about, and I write about our conflicts. I write about an argument we had when I was a teenager. My mother knew how to fall in love like nobody I've ever met. And I envy her that. She had a great capacity for love, but it also meant that there were many men who came through our lives. And that was painful and complicated for me when I was growing up. And I write about an argument we had when I was a teenager after one of these men who had disappointed both of us and left our lives. And I said to her, do you know why these men keep passing through our lives? It's because you don't deserve love. I was furious with her. It was painful for me to write that scene because I didn't want to think about having said that to her and what that must have felt like, that there she was, heartbroken after the end of a marriage. And, the person who, the son she's raising, who she's living with, who's still in her life, and she's trying to give what the love she has to me, and I'm saying, oh, you don't deserve love. And that's one of many scenes where I wanted to write, certainly not a purely sentimentalized version of our story. And I also write very directly about the experience of losing a loved one. And I think we live in a culture in which there's often not enough conversation about grief and death and what it's like to be with a loved one in those last days. And for me, that was the most emotionally extraordinary experience I've ever had, being with my mother in the last 7 days of her life, knowing that every day was holy because this was the last time that we had together. So in this book, I wanted to go to those places where the emotion was most raw, and that didn't mean only what was good in our relationship. Going through the death of a loved one demands that we relinquish certain illusions about our lives. One of the illusions with which most of us live is that we have control over our own lives. And so when my mother was dying, a nurse said, there's 1 month. And then the doctor said there's 1 week. And I wanted to feel precisely that I could measure the amount of time remaining so I could count it out and value every moment. But I had to come to a point where I realized that's not life, that's not death. There's something happening here that's larger than me, that's larger than my mother. She doesn't choose the day that she's going to die. And she's known she's had this cancer longer than I have, and she's just lived to make the most of every day. And she's called me back home so we can spend this last month of her life together. And that's what we've done. And that's what I wanted to write about. And there was a moment when we were in the hospital, I write about this, where I realize I don't need more time to know what it has meant to me to be her son. I have that inside of me, and I'm going to carry it for the rest of my life. And she doesn't need some perfect romantic, poetic ending to her life. She has lived her life. She has been true to herself and to me, and she has lived as fully as she can. And she's still going to live within me and within the other people who she loved and loved her. And her life might end tomorrow or a week from now, and I'll cherish every moment. I'll hold her hand for as long as it's still warm, but I don't decide. She doesn't decide. There's something larger than all of us here. The fact that we don't know how long it's going to be, that we can do that with each other, that's what makes it precious.
It says so much about your relationship that that was something that was allowed to happen in the sense that she called you home and you went and you knew the importance of it. She knew the importance of it and that it was time. It was never, I know people say it and I know how they mean it, but sometimes it comes off odd where people will talk about the burden of a caregiver. There certainly are burdens, and it's certainly it's a monumental job. But you were one who embraced it and looked at it and explored it and realized certainly in the end that this was one of the most precious gifts you could ever receive.
Well, I was 26 and I certainly didn't do everything right. And I made mistakes in trying to care for my mother. And what I did feel and what I have felt even more deeply in these last 8 years since she died is the enormous privilege of being able to return to her the love that she gave to me. And that's what that time was about. It was about saying to her, there is nothing in my life larger than you. And I don't care that I'm in my mid-20s and it's a period where we're expected to go out and make careers and achieve and all of that. That can all wait. I want to be with you in this period and give you what you need because everything that I have comes from what you have given to me. And that made me her. Giving me the chance to be there with her was an extraordinary gift, and it made me a fuller person, more capable of giving and experiencing love. And that's what we're here for.
And as far as knowing for certain who your father is, then that all takes a back seat. It does in the novel, but it seems like it has in your life as well.
People ask me, and I always say, I know exactly who I am. I'm my mother's son.
Right.
That completes me. My relationship to her is the center of my identity and my relationship to myself. When I was young, she used to say, you are loved, you are protected, you have everything you need. When I was a kid, I had no idea what she was talking about. And now these days, that's how I feel. I'm loved. I'm protected. I have everything I need.
I thought one of the most beautiful sections of the book, it's heartbreaking, but you want to get her to see Dylan at Bethel Woods, site of the Woodstock Festival. And the pains you go through to get her there, she's not feeling at all well. and you get good seats and you get close, and there's you there's the mobility of getting her there, and then there's a point where she just isn't has to leave and doesn't want to be there anymore. And what you realize from that is that this is definitely more for you than it was for her. And I assume that also goes away, that there's not that need to be in the same room as him.
For me, it was a wonderful experience to write about their relationship and for my art to intersect with hers and with his, and the scenes that depict the beginning of their relationship in the 1970s. They're both in this apartment where I live now, and he's writing Blood on the Tracks and she's performing Hedda Gabler, and they're each trying to become themselves as artists, and I'm taking their story and interweaving it with my own life and my story and my desire to write a novel. And for me to live in that same room with the two of them artistically, that's enough. I don't need more than that.
The name of the new novel is Boy from the North Country by Sam Sussman. It is published by Penguin Press. It is such an emotional and beautiful novel, and I thank you so much for bringing it into the world and for sharing with us. It's an amazing piece of work, and I so appreciate you talking to us this morning.
Thanks, Joe. It's a great pleasure to be on with you.
Sam Sussman's new novel is Boy from the North Country. It's published by Penguin Press. Thanks to our producer, Sarah LeDuc. Write to us at book@wamc.org. The latest on national productions programs is available via the Airwaves newsletter at wamc.org and on social media at WAMC Radio. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.